Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. Let's continue our conversation tonight with Professor Sanjeev Krishna. He's a professor of molecular parasitology and medicine at the Institute of Infection and Immunity in London. Professor Krishna, I want to talk to you about variants and whether India will likely become a reservoir for variants of the coronavirus to perhaps develop and maybe become a threat to other nations. We're seeing Nepal, which is said to be suffering from the spillover effects of India's current COVID-19 surge. How are you understanding the issue of variants, particularly when it comes to India's COVID-19 crisis?
Well, that's a very important question. The thing about these viruses is that they mutate. And mutation is a random event. And so the more virus there is, the more mutations there will be. That's just, you know, simple maths. And so at the moment, you know, India has a huge burden of COVID-19. And so the risk of having mutations is just much higher. But the same would have been true during surges in Europe or during surges in the Americas, for example. So that risk is always there. It is unpredictable as to what variants might arise and what properties these variants might have. So, you know, today it's India, tomorrow it could be, who knows? I hope not, but it could even be Malaysia or another country. So, you know, the approaches that one takes to deal with this, I think, apply across the board. And the most important thing is obviously to bear down on the infection using all the tools in our toolkit. And, you know, I think, you know, we mentioned before that there are now effective vaccines against COVID-19. And yet, even though India is one of the producers of these vaccines, I think it's only at the moment about 10% coverage. And Malaysia, it's even lower. So I think that, you know, this is going to be one of the most powerful ways to try and address the infection and any potential variants as well. Because at the moment, it looks like, to a greater or lesser extent, different vaccines still seem to have the ability to suppress infections in most people.
Professor Krishna, I want to ask you, because you said that variants could emerge anywhere. The virus could mutate from any source in any country. And I wanted to ask you what countries can do to prepare for that. Because I believe, you know, genome sequencing is quite an important step in identifying new variants that could become, you know, more infectious or more deadly. Was India prepared for that? Are other countries prepared for that? I'm just thinking what Malaysia can learn from that.
Again, a great follow-on, because when I have been discussing, sometimes even on television actually, with virologists in India, the great plea has been to really ramp up sequencing capability for SARS-CoV-2 sequences. And you could say exactly the same in Malaysia. I think it is a really, really useful piece of information, that sequence, and looking for variants and understanding if there are variants of interest, which is that we don't really know yet whether they're going to become, you know, worse infections or what other properties they might have, or whether they are variants of concern, where we now have a feeling that these mutations, you know, could cause more severe disease, could be transmitted more easily, or indeed might have some influence on responses by vaccines. So the strength of sequencing, its importance, was highlighted by one of the positive aspects of the way the UK has managed this infection, because that is one of the strengths in the UK. There may be many weaknesses, but that really was one of the strengths. And it's a great lesson to link up with this sequencing elements in the UK collaboratively throughout the rest of the world.
Sanjeev, one clear divergence between, I think, the Indian scenario and the Malaysian one is that the government here is committed to giving everybody the vaccine free of charge. And I understand in India, that's not true. And people are paying for their vaccines. And And this, of course, plays into the stark inequalities that India already has. I mean, can the Indian middle class save itself if it cares nothing for its poor?
No, it can't. I think it's as simple as that. And I think it is the duty of every government, if we come back to basic principles, that health is a fundamental human right. And I think the lead of many countries to provide vaccines free has to be one that is implemented. My understanding, I mean, I had to look at this actually just before coming on, Sharad, to see if the vaccines were being charged for. I believe some states are giving some vaccines free, but there is this dual system people can pay. And, the private sector seems to be involved as well, perhaps. I don't know. All I can say is that I think it's critical that everyone, as many people who can be reached to be vaccinated, should be reached, including the most hard to reach populations. Same in places in Sarawak, for example, which may be difficult to reach. These are the people. You know, it could be migrants, it could be displaced individuals, the deprived populations. We must reach all of these if we are not only for natural justice, which is a key point, but actually for self-preservation, because you've heard the mantra many times, no one is safe until everyone is safe.
Right. But if we were to come back to the case of India in terms of vaccination, 26 million people in India have been vaccinated. If you compare that out of a population of 1.4 billion, that's barely a drop. And I'm wondering if vaccination is one of the toolkits in India's, arsenal, one of the weapons in India's arsenal, but it's not being fully utilized or may not be able to be fully utilized in the near future. What are we going to have to expect in terms of this COVID-19 tsunami, as you put it? Are there going to be further waves? Are you concerned about that, given how quickly this virus spreads?
Yes, I am. Let's not forget that what we're seeing predominantly, I think, displayed on our screens is what's happening in the big places, whether it's New Delhi or Mumbai or whatever. And the worry is, really, the real concern is that when this virus starts to, or perhaps is already spreading in rural populations, where healthcare facilities may be non-existent or even much harder to reach. So at the moment, there are so many problems to solve at different levels. Vaccination efforts just have to be accelerated phenomenally, and access to vaccines, both for the country and for the individuals in different areas. But at the same time, there has to be a capacity strengthening to manage the acute phases of infection. Why, for example, in a country like India, has there been such a dreadful oxygen shortage? Because preparations could have been made. Take the examples of a state that has managed things up till now very effectively, and is now going to institute a lockdown to control its infection in Kerala. Here is a state that let's look back on it. Had the experience of Nipah virus outbreak and managed that, and then in the first wave of COVID-19, did extremely well, and is now taking control and instituting strong measures, whilst at the same time putting into place preparations in advance of the current wave of oxygen supply, drugs, and so on. Now, it may be that these measures themselves may not be sufficient. I hope they are. But at least there has been planning at some central level.
Sanjeev, is history a guide for scientists like yourself? The popular press likes to mention the Spanish flu. It was either 2 or 3 years for that to come under control. And with science much less developed, and global connectivity much less efficient. Today, shouldn't we expect to, turn the corner on this much faster than the world did with the Spanish flu? Or are we looking at something so dissimilar that history won't teach us anything?
No, I think it's extraordinary, actually, how quickly things have managed to move. Just about a year from a new infection to vaccines that work, and they work remarkably well. And if you look at the mRNA vaccines, they've opened up a new way of dealing with not just infections, but other conditions like cancers and so on. So, I don't want to talk about silver linings in clouds when the globe is still suffering this pandemic, but really, it really is a very positive thing that has come out as well of this whole effort, this collaborative effort. But the old problems are still there, the inequalities, and what COVID-19 has done is to just underline and highlight and point out and, cause us to relook at the enormous inequalities, both between nations and within nations.
Yes, that's a very, very good point. Professor Krishna, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Really do appreciate your time and you sharing your insights with us. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This, but don't forget to get all the latest news and information on COVID-19 vaccines. You can get that on the Astro Awani app or at astroawani.com. Thank you so much for watching tonight. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
We will be back with you for another episode of Consider This on Monday. Till then, have a great weekend and good night.